Everyone, how we doing today? Brian, hang tight just for a moment. I apologize, everyone. I've been having extreme technical difficulty with the computer tonight. Wow. So I'm on the phone for right now. We've been gone for a few weeks, and I apologize, but boy, has it been a hectic 2024. Wife had surgery. I've had knee surgery. We've been traveling. It's just been nuts. So thanks for being patient with us. I wanted to come back and start the series here with a good friend of mine, Brian Wilson. And, you know, I got to thinking, Brian, the timing couldn't have been any better. We had a WASDE report today. So a lot going on in the markets. And boy, they sure did react a little bit today. I don't know what it's going to hold or not, but we'll see what you think. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great, Rick, and I agree with you. What a great day to get this thing going tonight. I mean, not only to get the WASDE number to talk about, we got like fundamental news in the cattle market with the dairy farming issue, and a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I got to get back to my old ways. I start off every webinar the same thing. I'm going to ask you the first question out of the chute. Brian, what's on your mind right now? What have you been thinking about?
Opportunity, man. That is the number one thing on my mind, is what this number this morning gave us today is opportunity for the upcoming year. And I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. I think this has opened up an opportunity for farmers to hedge and speculators to speculate. I think I'm so more upbeat about what's in front of us this upcoming year than listen to the doldrums of people so negative about what's in front of us with no demand and big supplies. I'm excited. I think there's a lot of opportunity. I think it's going to present itself each and every year.
I agree. Boy, there's just a lot of chatter on social media and the coffee shop. I mean, it is so hard to digest all of that, or better yet, it's so hard to stay muted from that and not try to be swayed by, you know, those opinions. It's hard. It's really hard. And, you know, out here in the farming community, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of grain on hands, Brian. I mean, I had to run for some parts today over into central Illinois. And man, we saw a lot of outside storage, corn on the ground. The bins are still full. I mean, we are supplied up pretty hard. But here we are coming into our growing season. South America is coming out of a pretty dry growing season. So, you know, give us what you think about what's going on around the world here to start off with.
Well, you know, so I'll go back to that. That comment about, you know, the coffee shop and everything else. And I go back to a time, I think it was the exact day, I think it was June the 4th of 2022. And I was looking at, I was looking at corn.
I know where this is going.
$6.40. And we were talking about inflation and wheat and everything else. And there was this one commodity that just sat there in the doldrums, not doing anything. It just kind of sat there. And I asked myself, what's with this one? Why does nobody want this commodity? And this commodity is cocoa. And I'm like, nobody wanted cocoa. Nobody had any interest in cocoa. I'm like, you know, I started doing the whole coffee shop thing and thinking, you know, it's not really a commodity. It's a commodity we can do without. You know, we don't really need chocolate. We don't really need all that stuff. It's a commodity we can do without. We can't really do without corn and beans, and that's where people are going to come from. At the time, cocoa was $2,300 a metric ton, and corn was $6.40. As I'm sitting with you today right now, cocoa is $99.77 a metric ton. It has quadrupled in price, and corn has gone from $6.40 to $4.30. My point that I'm trying to make is that we can have you know, a lot of grain on farm, and we can have a lot of negative bearish inputs going on all over the all around us in the coffee shops. It doesn't take much. It really, really doesn't take much to make one of these commodities go in vogue. And if it happens, you see what happens. And these markets become unhinged. Look at cotton. Look at cocoa. These markets have gone absolute bonkers. I think you've got to be very, 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 very careful that can happen to corn and soybeans. And when I look back, I think it was 2019 when the Chinese just kept coming in and every day was flash sales of buying corn, buying beans, buying corn, buying beans every day. And what I heard was the exact same thing I'm hearing now. Oh, we have more corn and more beans than they could possibly buy. We can give them all we got, and we can still keep selling it. And what happened is the flash sales would come out, and we'd break the market. Yeah, we're teaching them, we show them. All they did is buy more. So it won't take a lot to get to empty those bins, and it won't take a lot to get this market cranking.
No, I agree. And let's go back to your story there a little. You went on a little different tangent that I thought. Let's go to the other side of that equation. What did corn do from that 640 price on June? What happened?
It broke. It went all the way
And
down.
everybody on the internet was saying, what? We're going to $8.
Eight buck corn. Inflation, we're running out of corn. We're going to $8. Every single person was bullish.
So now that leads me into a thought here now, guys. Brian's been trading, Brian and I have been trading about the same amount of time in our lives, but he trades way more than I do, okay? But the point here is, these markets, I've never seen such volatility. It's almost impossible to trade futures anymore unless you've got money to risk and you can watch this. I mean, today, prime example, today, feeder cattle went from $1.20 or 30 up to $1.50 down back to unchanged in about 30 minutes. Why did that happen? There was no news out today. It's just the way the markets move. That is why this guy right here, Brian, is so important now, because he's the option guru. And you have a lot less risk on the table when you leverage yourself correctly with options. So take it away.
So, thank you very much, Rick. I really appreciate that. And one of the things that we try to do on our daily bunker is we try to coordinate hedging for farmers when options are the right time to do it. I mean, for so long, I've seen farmers getting advice on getting into options at absolutely the wrong time and buying the wrong strikes. And when they don't make money on the options, they give up and they hate them. They're like, these are fools. These are fool's products, and we just don't like them. So when we were trading up in that 260 to 265 area in the feeder cattle, and it just was going sideways and coiling for, the last, 2 or 3 weeks, we were talking on the bunker every single day, and we run these historical volatilities versus the implied volatilities, and it was a farmer's dream. And I kept saying, and I think that most of the farmers, and if there are any out that are on here right now that are on our bunker, they can attest to this. And I believe that they did. We were talking about, we're like, these puts are very, very inexpensive. You can protect your whole herd by buying these puts, and look what happened. I mean, you get these big moves that come out of nowhere. And to your point, Rick, these markets are getting unhinged. They are getting extremely volatile. And what's happening is you have these algorithms, okay? You have these algorithms that are built in. Let's take corn, for example, over the last like 3 weeks. And what has happened with corn, and we again, it's another thing we talk about on the bunker, is the corn. It basically, every time I'd run our ranges for the day, I'd say, okay, it looks like 448 in July to 456. It's just coiling, coiling, coiling. When you get ranges like that, it's almost like a slot machine. These algorithms, they tighten down. They tighten down in the markets because all they're looking for is just back and forth market movement. And if they can make an eighth of a cent or a quarter of a cent just back and forth, they'll tighten that algorithm down to where it's scalping like every quarter of a cent. And when it's doing that, it keeps that market in check. Once a market breaks out, once a market starts to violate some of the basic concepts of what the algorithms and the funds are looking at, they unloosen those scalping mechanism. It no longer is a quarter cent. Now it's a nickel. That's when you start seeing corn moving, nickel moves going, just like you saw on feeder cattle. It started tightening and tightening and tightening and getting into this coil. It breaks out. There's news. All of a sudden, they loosen up the algorithm and it's moving in like dollar increments instead of like 10-cent increments. And people don't think that this can happen in corn and soybeans because we've been coiling for so long. maybe I'm wrong, but in my years of experience, the more it coils, the longer it coils, the more violent this, when it becomes unhinged, it's going to
Yeah,
get.
that's the long. I think the old saying is it's going to have a long tail.
Yep, I completely believe that. And and the options, I love what we're doing in the bunker through the options, because for most of my career, especially in agriculture, they build in what we call risk premium. We build in drought premium. We build in, I call it event type premium. In case of a president being killed, the market reacts to that. Or in case of an invasion of a country, markets react to that. In case of a drought, markets react to that. For most of my career, there's been a premium, in the options, and there should be a premium to the options, to the actual flat movement of the futures. So in other words, if the futures are moving at 18%, for the options to be priced at 20% is not unusual. That 2%, 2% premium that the options are trading over that historical is typical. That's
Yeah.
not happening right now. Right now in agriculture, what's happening is they're trading at a discount to pure movement. That is such an opportunity, and I hope it stays there up until and through the growing season, because it's such an opportunity for farmers to take advantage of very inexpensive ways to hedge their crop.
So let's go back to this coiling concept that you were talking about. I didn't realize, I mean, I guess I didn't think about it. But so someone, I mean, I'd love to go to a hedge fund and see how they function. I can imagine how it functions, but I'd love to, I mean, these guys are trading billions of dollars. I mean, some of these funds are $500 to $600 million, and they got multiple of these funds. But I guess, is it just one guy on a computer, Brian, that says, okay, you know what? We're no longer doing this quarter cent scalp. We're now going to relax it to 2.25. I mean, is it just a keystroke and that's it?
Yeah, it's like a desk manager that just turns it off and says, widen it out. Do you mind if I pull up a chart?
No, go right ahead. And I want you to also, Brian, show the channel that is so, I mean, this is where you get your daily ranges from. And it's amazing, folks. These markets just hang in these channels until they break out.
Since we started talking about feeder cattle, I'm gonna pull up a feeder cattle chart right here. And what I want you to notice about this feeder cattle chart is,
Yep.
you see here where this market has just gone sideways for so long. It stayed within this band of resistance and support. And this is what I was talking about. It's just coiling, 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 coiling. It's just staying within this range. And this is where I kept talking about in this area right here. And you got to be really careful when you do this, because when you overstay your welcome, you wait for the cheapest of the cheap, you run out of time. What I said to people, I said, you want to start building your position. You don't want to shoot all everything, but you want to buy like 10% of the puts you need to buy here, another 10% here, another 20% here, and eventually you want to have your position on the further out you go. But you see how this market has gone straight up. And then all of a sudden it starts to go sideways. This is where I said you gotta start noticing this. You gotta start seeing this. You gotta start seeing that this market is starting to break. And look what happens once we break this support level that we see here in the past. This is the support level. I could draw the support level all the way back here. I did it. This support level is defined by these little lows right here. And once it gets below there, I call this a peekaboo, okay? We got below, but what was nice about this is this downtrend channel had started. It started
Yep.
here and it was in this channel, and it never ever peaked up below, tried to come back. And we talked about this on the day that it happened, that going back up here, this was a great sell above against this downtrend line. Then all of a sudden the news comes out and boom. Now the market's starting to look for new prices. Where do I think this market is going? I talk about it every morning. Again, notice what's happening. We're trying to recover.
Yeah.
Their recovery is very, very weak. It's a very, very tight range recovery still inside this downtrend channel. It's not violating anything. This market is a much better buy. If you're going to buy this market, it's a much better buy in this 252 after it breaks out of the uptrend, uh, out of out of the downtrend channel than it is inside this downtrend channel. If it stays here, it's going to find weakness again, and it's going to go back into this area of range consolidation here.
Yeah.
I could pull up a corn chart so we can see the exact same thing that is going on in corn. That has
now, just hey, happened. Brian, the other thing there that I don't want to interrupt you there, I'm sorry, but there when you said you have an opportunity, like when you get back up to that upper end of the channel and you want to go short right there, you know what your risk is, right? You got to have stops up there, and it's pretty tight to your entry point, so you're not going to risk a lot of money here. And you'll get stopped out if you're wrong pretty quick, right?
Absolutely. That's the beauty of having those lines there. They define where your risk level is, and you know exactly where you're wrong. You can flip and go the other way. But especially for a hedger, you've got defined levels where you know when it gets there, I've got to do something. You know, and if you do something and you're wrong as a hedger, that's great. If your candle's going to go straight up and you bought a couple of puts, that's what you want.
Yeah, that's the best thing that can happen if you were wrong on a hedge position.
Absolutely right. So I want to pull up the corn, because what I want you to recognize about the corn is this is very, very similar. Did you guys see this?
Yeah.
This is very, very similar to the cattle. The cattle just went to the downside. And the corn, we talked about this morning, that this area right in here, we just sold below this 257 or 457 area in the corn, was a very critical area. It has to get above this area. The fact that it's gone sideways and coiled for this long has been an opportunity. Now, the opportunity has not been in owning corn options. Corn options have been very expensive relative to the movement, and they've stayed that way. But what was really nice about today, and we talked about it a couple of days before the report, is being short corn volatility, but being long a little bit of the front month gamma to protect against a move will probably cover this report pretty well. It's exactly what kind of happened. We went up, the volatility came in about 2.5%, and the market came back to more normalized volatility is relative to the ranges. They were overpriced. They're no longer overpriced anymore. You have an opportunity to buy back your shorts. And now the market is giving you an opportunity to get into this market for very, very inexpensive option pricing going into the planting season, which is really, really nice. You know, the other thing that we look at, you asked about the guy on the desk that just flips the switch, Rick. It's this guy right here. See this red line?
Yeah.
That guy, when he sees that get triggered, that guy switches the switch immediately. That's the 100-day moving average. And when these commodity funds get price movement above or below 100-day moving averages, that's when they move big. Right now, these funds are still short a big chunk of corn. If this market ever gets up to that 100-day moving average, where my cursor is right there and gets above there, they will flip. They will buy in their whole position. And they will start to accumulate a long position.
And Brian, well, I mean, we don't, neither of us know what that number is, but I mean, they are short so many bushels there to flip it. And then, I mean, to flip, just that's a bunch of buying just to get flat, and then more buying to get long. I mean, they can move this corn market 30, 40 cents pretty easy.
Oh, easy. People discount the fact that corn can go to $5. They don't think it can go there because they see corn in the bins, and the coffee shop is so bearish, you know, that, you know, everybody thinks that it's so overvalued. Corn could go to $5, and there's a gap up there that in that $5 area, especially in December, that it will not take very much to get the corn moving. And if it gets up to there and then you throw some fundamental news on top of it, you got, you know, for some reason, you know, it's difficult to plant, or you start to get into a drought, you know, this market, it's got some legs to it. And I think there's so much complacency in this market when it comes to agriculture that, you know, I think you saw that in the cattle market when it was the last time you and I talked, when feeder cattle were up around that 275 area. There was a lot of complacency up there that the market couldn't break. And look what happened to it. I mean, it went down to like 250.
Well, And the other thing we got to remember here is now we're on the opposite end of the spectrum. Corn's pretty low, but we're talking about feeder cattle who were historically pretty high.
Right.
I mean, folks, when you get in a position like this, you've got to take some money off the table. I mean, you've got to get some protection on.
Yes.
Okay, say you're wrong and it does go to 300, but it can look where it's wound up going to. It went all the way into like the 220s or 230s here. So,
yeah, Rick, Rick, you know this story that because I've talked to you on the phone about this, you know, before. When we talk about hedges, I'm going to talk about cocoa hedges for an example right here. So cocoa, when cocoa first went up to like 5,000, you could buy the $5,000 cocoa puts against your cocoa production. Cocoa went from 5,000 to 7,000. Do you know what happened to the price of those cocoa puts? They went up.
They went up,
They went up.
and the futures went up, and the put should go down in value, and it went up in value.
Right. Because what happens is when markets become unhinged like this, and this is why you need a broker or you know, a confidant, someone that knows how options work. When markets become unhinged like this, the vega that's in those options and the volatility that's associated with those options overpowers any kind of small delta or large delta that they have, and they actually go up in value because there's so much uncertainty because the market is moving so quickly. I've traded grain options where we've been limit down, and the calls that are way, way, way out of the money are up. But, I mean, I've traded when we're trading like $11, and we go limit down, and the $12 calls are up on the day. It's a phenomena that you have to recognize when it's happening and be ready to take advantage of it.
See, that's the things that, okay. Real quick, give us your website again so people know how to find you.
Our website is theoptionarmy.com, and we run a Discord channel every morning, and you can find that on my Twitter page at Badger Swimmer on Twitter. And if you just take the 14-day free chat, I'm not pushing anything on anybody. If you just take the 14-day free test and get on and see if it fits you. A lot of the stuff we talk about might be a little bit too technical for everybody, but it offers an insight into options that you probably aren't aware of. I mean, the one thing I'm really trying to get a handle of is to maximize profitability for farmers when it comes to their hedging, and for farmers to understand that when they buy an option, they're not just buying direction. Okay, so you buy a put, you're not just buying a put, for direction to go around. You're not just buying delta. There's other things that are associated that are attached to that option called vega, gamma, and theta. All four things, delta, gamma, vega, and theta, change the price of that option. So when the price of an option changes because vega goes up, has absolutely nothing to do with the integrity of that option for what we're putting it on for. We're putting it on to hedge production. When the option goes up in value for no particular reason other than vega, much like the cocoa puts that go up when the market goes up, that is a vega expansion. We want the farmers, and we want to be able to take advantage of that appreciating asset, which they have, which for the past 100 years, brokers, not 100 years, but since 1983 when we had options, brokers tell them to buy these puts, and they just throw them in the drawer until they work or don't. We want them to be able to take advantage of these options when they make the money. It's an asset. It's a living, breathing asset, and we want to be able to maximize profitability with the option when it changes the price.
And you see, that's why, folks, I try to put guests on here that give us information that we may be or may not be familiar with. And what Brian just went through there for 2 minutes is extremely complex. I mean, I can't tell you how complex it is to figure out the theta, the delta, the gamma, and all those other Greek names he rattled off. But that's why you need this guy, because then he can get through the minutiae, and then we are the 3% of the people on the right side of the option equation, not the 97% who are on the wrong side of the equation,
Right.
because they were buying those puts when the market was at the bottom, not at the top, or whatever the case may be here. So, okay, so now, first of all, let me say also, I think Rachel's still on, and she's going to be with us all night. Folks, if you want, and I'm on my phone, so I've got limited access here. I can barely see anything but Brian on the screen here. If you want to talk to Brian, let's try it again. Let's raise your hand. There's a raise your hand button at the bottom. Rachel can find you, and then you can actually talk to Brian, ask him a question, or go through. Maybe you don't even have to, if you want to tell him a scenario that you did. Let him talk you through it. Now, I want to ask you a question right now, Brian. So I'm a farmer out here. I've got some corn in the bin. Let's just talk corn. I've got corn in the bin. There's a new crop coming. We're getting ready to plant. What should I be doing right now? What kind of an option play should we be looking at?
Well, the one thing with the corn, it was a better opportunity 24 hours ago than it is now, just because the volatility was a little bit higher. But that's been offset with a little bit of this rally that we've had. So for me right now, I don't want to just be outright long puts, okay? Because I don't want the volatility exposure that I talk about. So a corn position that I'd be interested in if I was a farmer is, I don't really, and this is a personal thing, I don't know how much you want to hedge at this moment. Maybe it's 10%. Well, so I would take 10% of my production. Now let me go back, because a lot, this is gonna, I don't really want to confuse people, but this comes back to Delta.
Yeah. Because
if I have 100,000 bushels of corn expected production, and I'm looking to hedge, what I just said, that I'm looking to hedge 10,000 bushels. Okay, that does not mean you go out and buy two puts. Two puts does not hedge 10,000 bushels. Even though two puts at the very end, it may be 10,000 bushels. When you put that on, it's not 10,000 bushels. So what you want to do is you want to have a delta equivalent. If you want to hedge 10,000 bushels, and I think this has been lost for years and years and years, because they think they're hedged with 10% and they're not. So they've got 10,000 bushels and they want that hedge. You've got to be delta equivalent to two futures. So what does that mean? So what does that mean is, if I was going to sell a two lot of $5 calls in the December, that doesn't even equal one delta. To be delta neutral, that 10,000 bushels, you have to sell three $5 calls. And with that money that you take in, you want to buy, you know, three or six. I like it because the puts are so inexpensive to the calls. You can buy double the amount of puts. I buy six for 40 puts. That is a hedge on 10% of the production. That is delta neutral. And what that does for you is, if we do start to break, it automatically starts to hedge more for you, because those 440 puts, the closer we get to the money, the more they go in the money, they accumulate a bigger delta, and they hedge your crop for you as we go down. But on the
that makes sense. That makes sense, because eventually it'll turn into 15,000 bushels.
Right. Or 30,000 bushels.
30.
And people ask me all the time about this position I talked about last year, about this 1x6. Okay. Now, the reason I did this 1x6 is because I'm not fortunate enough to have the crop in my backyard. So I have to sell an in the money option to replicate what having the physical property in my backyard is. So what I did was, I sold one $14 put and I bought six $12 puts. Now people are like, well, you know, I don't like that, because what if we go down to $12? I said, well, that's what I want it to do. I want it to go down to $12 because this accumulator just accumulates and accumulates and accumulates, and I get shorter and shorter and shorter. But what happens is that farmers have, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, I just don't think that they've been educated enough to understand that you don't hold these things all the way to expiration. These things grow and they lose money and gain value every single day. So as we go down and these options appreciate in value, it puts the farmer in a powerful position. I mean, I like it to play in hockey or soccer. I like to be on offense. I don't like to play defense. And having something like that on allows a farmer to play offense when the market is breaking. I like that position for a farmer. I want him to be in a powerful position. You know, a farmer who's all of a sudden accumulated a big short position against his crop, completely hedged and actually getting short, now is in a position like, hey, I want to buy it here. I want to buy some. I want to buy some corn here. I think that's a, I think that's a good example of how options can put the farmer in a much more powerful position than he would be if just throwing them in the drawer and waiting.
Okay, hey Brian, can you think of a chart right off the top of your head? I know this is just a cold, quick question. Can you show us a chart or think of a chart you could bring up and share that has showed a move? Let's say, I don't care if it's a down or an up, either one. A market's been trending up. It looks like it's rolling over, but then it fakes you out and takes off again. Do you have a chart you could show like that?
I think corn did that last year. So let's take a look at corn.
Because see, then you've got to, I mean, you've got to be able to identify these fake outs, you know?
Yeah.
And you've got this, and you and I've talked about this a lot. Brian and I talk quite often, but it's really strange. It's not strange, but when you think about life in general, I mean, there's a book out there called 6 Degrees of Separation. I mean, that just nails it, man. I mean, my dad's dad traded on a 3-day pattern. My dad traded on a 3-day pattern, and I trade on a 3-day pattern. I meet Brian, we start talking, and he's talking about a 3-day pattern. I'm saying, wait a minute, you're doing what? And it's the
Yeah.
same thing. It's the same 3-day. And now you call it, I think, a 5-day, but the 2 days are set up. And
Right.
then you look, so explain that.
Okay, so I trade on the what you're talking about, Rick, is exactly right. I trade on what I call a 5-bar pattern. So I'm looking for a pattern that looks like my hand. Okay, so where's my hand? I'm looking for a pattern that looks like my hand. One where you make the thumb, then the second finger where you make a higher low and a higher high. The third, your middle finger, it makes a higher high and a higher low, and then it stops. The next bar, the next one on the, this is a bearish 5-bar, by the way. The next one is a lower high and a lower low. That is called the setup bar. You don't trade on that bar. It alerts you to a pattern that you've got to pay attention to. The next bar right here, the confirmation bar, the one that makes another lower high, another lower low, sets the ball in motion that this is a bearish position. When you look at the market like this, it's the exact same thing. It's just to the upside. So when I look at this corn chart right here, and I look at one, two, three, there's the middle finger. Now we start the setup bar. We've got a lower high and a lower low. Lower high, lower low confirmation confirms this 5-bar pattern, confirms it. Now, what was really nice about this, and we talk about this on our morning bunkers, is when you get patterns like this, and I liken it to having a toolbox full of tools that you can go, you dive into and you can refer to. When you get a 5-bar pattern right around a 200-day moving average,
Oh.
that is a really, really powerful signal. You can get a 5-bar pattern right down here, one, two, three, four, five. There's nothing really here. It's not that powerful. But when you get it around these moving averages, right, in these areas, 100-day moving average, 200-day moving average, and they cross, they become very, very powerful, and you get extended moves. And the velocity of the 5-bar on the way up will dictate the velocity of the 5-bar on the way down. As you can see, this one was very, very violent to the upside, and then boom, it was very, very violent to the downside. Now, I'm going to try and pull up. It's always great to be armchair quarterback and look back in time and say, hey, yeah, everyone can see that. Let's take a look at one that's starting to rear its head. Okay, this is cocoa, and I use cocoa right now as an example. With the people that are listening to me in the morning a lot, because
Look at this.
this is real time. Okay, this is real time. Now we drew this line, back when it started, like right in here. So this when these bars come down and touch this line, we're not putting these lines in and saying, okay, now they touched it. This line was established a long time ago. When
Yeah.
this uptrend gets broken, when it gets broken is when I believe this market is completely done. I mean, because this market has moved so violently, the scale has changed quite a bit. You can see down here, this is back. This is actually, it's back here. This is the day that I was talking about, right in here, when I was talking about corn being 640 and cocoa being 2300. That's what happened. It went sideways. No one was interested in cocoa. Look, it just kind of stayed above the 100 day, stayed above the 100 day, stayed above the 100 day, and then boom. you know, we got this massive move. The way this market, it looked like it was five bar was starting. That's why you cannot trade until you get a confirmation bar. One, two, three. Everybody's okay. Here we go. Five bar setup. It is. It's the start of a five bar setup. Here's your confirmation bar. But like you said, Rick, a market that gives you a head fake. Here it is. Today was the head fake. The day it took out the previous day's high. So you cannot trade this as a five bar. You've got to be a little bit more patient. You got to wait for the signal. This market, it would not be bad for, if you're bearish, it would not be bad for this market to go sideways and violate this uptrend line on a sideways pattern. If it does that, it's probably going to find a air pocket down to the 7,500. And like I've talked, I think it comes back down to the 6,000 to 5,500 really, really quickly. But so when you talk about head fakes, that's what I look for. I look for, and believe me, my ears perked up and I was ready. I was ready to pull the trigger when it started to do this five bar. Here was a setup. I'm like, this is it, man. Here we go. I get a confirmation bar that takes out this uptrend line. Off to the races, this market's going lower, but it didn't do that. It reversed and went higher. Now you got that's what you're talking about when you talk about when markets give you head fakes and understanding when those head fakes and being patient. I mean, how often do we talk about in trading or in hedging, you know, patience being a virtue? It's something that you have to instill. Patience and discipline are the two most important things that come to mind when you're talking about hedging or speculating.
And folks, you got to be careful. I mean, this cocoa market is vicious and wicked. I mean, first of all, the platform that I trade on, I can't trade cocoa anymore. They have frozen it because it's too volatile. Okay. So that's number one thing to remember. Number two thing, this is not an environment to be selling options in either. Okay. Don't think you're going to sell calls to finance buying puts down here. You will get destroyed.
Yeah. You know, and that's the one thing I really don't like about trading. I've never liked it. And you hit the nail on the head, Rick, is they change that. They move the goalposts in the middle of the game. And it's very, very frustrating, especially if you've already got a position on and they change the margin system. They change the limits. They change what you can do when you're already in the market. It's very, very frustrating. So, you know, Rick's right. This is not a market to be messing around with. If you're not really, 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 really well attuned to options and markets that move with extreme velocity. I've never seen a market move with this much velocity ever.
I never have either. I mean, this thing's straight up. And that tells you that one day it's coming straight down.
God, yeah. I mean, I'll look right now, and I believe that the ranges that we're looking for in cocoa right now are somewhere when cocoa was $2,300 a metric ton. If cocoa moved at 18% volatility, that was a lot. That was high. It's moving at 100% volatility, and the option volatilities are 60%. It's moving at like 8% a day. I mean, it's the moves that they're having. You know, you wake up in the morning, it's already moved 500 points.
And 500 points, that's $5,000 a contract.
Yeah, it's like beans moving $1 overnight every single night. And it's not that big a market. The velocity that this thing is moving at, cotton is not much different. I mean, cotton's very, very volatile right now. Also, you can't. I mean, I'll pull up a cotton chart. You look at a cotton chart, and you know we got a lot of cotton farmers out there. This is a windfall. I don't, you know, you've had ample opportunities with cotton to up in this area up in here where, you know, you can make decisions again. One, two, three, four, five. You have a five bar pattern continued. It doesn't fall through, rejects it. But here's the thing about this five bar pattern that I did. I was short cotton at this point. And I didn't get out. The reason I didn't get out is because it did not take out this high. This wick on this bar was very, very important. I talked about it on the bunker, and I said I'm going to give this some rope because this was a capitulation trade.
Yep.
When You had some people caught with margin calls from cocoa, and they were in cotton. They capitulated. Now, this you don't know this when it's happening, but you can see it, and you've seen it. You see it in grains all the time. So you want to pay attention to bars that look like this. Another one that you want to pay close attention to are bars like this. This little bar right here that has got no body to it, and it's got like a wick on the downside and a wick on the upside. It looks like a little bit of a hammer. You want to pay attention to those. They tell a story. They tell a story that you want to pay attention to, that things are changing. And things like this with big wick capitulation, this one would have been even better if this was a red body and we closed lower than they open. It didn't, but it does tell a story. That's the reason why I didn't buy the cotton back after this wick had already been put in. I wanted to give it a little. You want to give it
Yeah.
a little bit of running. And that's the beauty about trading options, is you don't have to like you don't have to. You don't have to get out when you have more staying power. And Rick,
Yeah.
you and I talked
Yeah.
about that, about cocoa when it was down around 4,400. We're like, okay, we'll do this one by two, and what are we risking? 30 cents? It was nothing,
Yeah.
as opposed to selling a call and risking, we're risking $300 and they're risking 7,000. It's
Yeah.
crazy.
Hey, put that cotton chart back up if you would, please. I can't see very good, Brian. I want you to tell me what's the date and the price of that over there where you were looking at the 5 bar right in there. What's the date and the price?
That is February the 28th,
And
and
what's the
the
price?
price was 103.80.
And go over here to the left, somewhere around those lows, and what's the date and the price?
Down
But further
here,
left. Yeah, right in there.
this is 77.60, and that is on so it's exactly June 28th. It's exactly, what is that, 7 months?
7 months, the price has rallied. How much? There's 60 cents. Is it or
77 to 103.
oh,
77 to 103.
so third, not quite 30 cents. So a farmer at that point. If they didn't like where it was, where your cursor is now, they sure should have liked it up there where that 5 bar pattern is developing and get the hedges on.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing, if you look at this, we've been talking about this for for a few days. This pattern right here, this market is not done. You can see this pattern right here, this wedge that's been built here by this minor support level that we went down to and touched a couple of times, framed by this downtrend line that we've started. This wedge, we might coil like for the next couple of days inside this wedge, but if we break out of this wedge, it's going to move violently one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's not gonna sit here. This is not an area that cotton is just going to sit and die. So if you're a cotton farmer, it's not going to kill you to do some sort of option strategy around this area. I'm not suggesting you go out there and start buying puts. I'm certainly not suggesting, you buy these $85 puts or 80 puts, because we'll get into that at some other date. But when you pick puts, especially when you're coming into markets that are very, very violent like this, it is so important what strike you pick, because with high volatilities, these puts may not work the way you think they're going to work on the downside. Whereas if you're buying, maybe you want to buy 10 of the 85 puts, it would be better to buy two of the 9,250 puts, because those will actually work on the downside, where these $10.85 puts may not. This is not a commodity that you want leverage on the downside. This is not a commodity that you want to be doing one by sixes or one by eights. It's just because you've got areas of where this thing is going to stop. You've got an area right here in this 90 to 87.50 area that it's going to stop. You've got another area right here in this 80 to 85 area. You pick these spots, and the market is going to stop there. It's not going to go down violently like the cocoa will. It's the market's going to move big, but it's not going to move big enough to compensate for what the cost of those puts are. Now, the way this market is shaping up, with the stochastics and the RSI is starting to turn higher. If it can hold this area, and this is why I like these kind of moves, especially if I'm hedging or if I'm speculating right here. If this to me, this is a very, very low risk entry point for cotton. Now, I could have drawn this line all the way across to capture the top of this range area right here. That's why I like this area, this 90. I believe the area is Let me see what exactly what it is. I believe it was like 9076 is the exact spot for this top. I like this area for a buy, because you know where you're wrong. You're wrong below. If it gets below that, it's gonna hunt for this 100 and 200 day moving average. But if you're right and you can get break out of this coil, this wedge here, this thing's got some legs to it. I think you can see 9750 really, really quickly. If it gets up there, I'd probably take a stab at selling it again, because I know, again, right up in this area, this 10150 area, is where I'm wrong. So this is a great market. If you're looking to hedge cotton, or if you're looking to speculate cotton, this is a great chart formation to be involved in this market.
Now, Brian, again, we have not talked today. Well, we talked briefly, but not about tonight here. But do you have the numbers in front of you? What the cotton numbers do? Did they decrease from what they thought they were going to be? Were they?
I was so focused on the grains, I didn't really even pay attention to
Well, okay, then tell
the
us the corn and beans.
corn acre. They caught us off guard. They were expecting 91.7 million acres, and they only got 90 million acres. The corn stocks number was also a little bit friendly. I mean, it was a little bit less than what they were expecting. The bean numbers, they came in as expected, and the stocks number was a little bit bearish. And wheat, I can't remember exactly what wheat was, but I think, the overall, and I talked about this, not that I know anything, because I don't, but I talked about this about a month, and I think I talked to you about it, Rick. And I asked the question, why would anybody farm when it costs more than it costs to put this stuff in the ground? You can't recoup your profits. And the overall number of acres coming down, I believe it was 5.7 million acres on cotton, corn, beans, wheat. With the overall acres coming down, people are speculating, and this is why I said opportunity in the very first thing that we talked about, because you got people speculating that the reason being that the acres came down so much is that it was a survey, and that people are just unsure about what to put down on their survey. I'm not a believer in that. I believe that these acres are down substantially because the prices of these commodities have come down to a point where, farmers are looking elsewhere, whether it's edible oils or whether it's sunflower seeds or whatever it is, that they're looking at other,
CRP or whatever.
yeah, they're looking at other areas to deploy that land, as opposed to putting it into $4 corn. So I, you know,
And that's what the market is designed to do, because
absolutely.
then you take the excess supply, and guess what? 12 months from now, we're talking about a not enough supply, and the demand is outrunning the supply. And what do the prices do then? They
Right.
turn and go higher. I mean,
Right.
this is what markets do.
And when it does do that, people can't get caught off guard that this is going to be, an explosion. Because you start looking at 90 million corn acres and you start getting trouble. And I mean, I don't know. I did not shovel snow this year. First time ever in my life in Illinois, I did not shovel snow. I talked to some farmers out in Kansas and some out in Iowa that have said that this is the driest it's ever been.
It's dry. It's dry.
They dig down there and they can't find subsoil moisture. I mean, I made the joke, and I you plant in the dust, the bins will bust. I don't believe that. I think that it's so, and I mean, I'm learning a lot about soil from you, but I mean,
This is Brian, this is the driest I've seen our profile in a long time. I put a spade in the ground 2 or 3 days ago, brought up the whole spade length up, tipped it out, and I could not form any part of that soil in my hand. It was that dry. It would not make a mud ball. And typically in late March, you would have a mud ball all the way down.
so if this persists, let's say this persists for, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. Let's say this persists through May. What does that do to the early germination of a plant? What does that do to yield? I mean, does it start to affect yield right away?
Well, not yet. No, because it won't affect germination. I mean, there's still enough moisture to plant a seed and germinate. Don't get me wrong, we've got moisture, but we just don't have excess moisture. It really, from a farm, I know farmers are never happy and never satisfied of, you know, I wish it would rain, then it rains. Boy, I wish it quit raining. You know, we're never satisfied. But I will say this, dry springs typically tend to give you a stronger finish at the end, because what you're doing is the plants, that the corn root plants or the soybean, they are driving down through the profile, getting to the moisture.
Well, if there's nothing down.
So when it really gets hot and dry, they are locked in and they can hang on.
But what if there's nothing down there that as it dries down there?
Well, that's the problem. If there's nothing down there, then it's going to be hard on the yield. It's going to be hard on the plant health. It's going to be hard on everything. But here's what we got to remember now. I don't care. I mean, my dad told me this a long time ago. And he was just talking about the United States. There's always 10% of the United States every single year has a weather problem. 10%, somewhere around the country. Okay. So you count on that. But Brian, here's what I want to drive home to people that are listening. Last year in 2023, and this was not true for everywhere, because there were some places that had horrible crops. But right here where we are in West Central Indiana, we did not have a lot of rain. Now, we had some timely rains, but we didn't have a lot of rain. Still had tremendous crop. So that's what's on everyone's forefront of thinking is, boy, the genetics must be getting better. They're breeding drought resistance in. They're doing something. I don't know what they're doing, but my gosh, we can raise a pretty good crop with not a lot of moisture. But here's the difference. Last year, we went into the year with the profile full of moisture. This year, it's not full of moisture.
You know, I mentioned that after the January 12th crop report number. I think I tweeted it on my Discord channel. I said that this should absolutely stick a fork in the drought narrative. This is the boy that cried wolf. And yeah. I firmly, firmly, firmly believe that the next time we have a 2012-type drought, no one's going to believe it. No one's going to buy into it. Option values are going to be inexpensive.
And then it's going to just rip.
And when you get that rip and it starts to look like a cocoa market, you want to be able to have a reference point like cocoa to look at and say, okay, this is happening now. This is taking place. I gotta stand back, or I gotta start taking precautionary measures, because no one, like you said, Rick, nobody, you talk to anybody, nobody believes we can have any kind of supply disruption due to shortfall in moisture anymore. They've seen it.
Right. Yeah. And I want to, I don't look at these markets like you do. I mean, you've got a tremendous memory. You can pick out these numbers and that's awesome. I can't do that. I do that. I have that kind of capability on other aspects of what I do. That's right. Why you're the trading professional here. But what I want to say here is, when you look at this cocoa market, okay, yeah. Cocoa has nothing to do with corn. At least you don't think it does. But cocoa could be the precursor for all of these commodities to start to lift and take off. You know, cotton, soybeans, corn, sugar, whatever the case may be. And this might be cocoa may be foreshadowing what we're going to see in these other commodity markets.
100% agree with that. I think that if you look at markets like cocoa and cotton, and you think that can't happen to your market, let's say you're trading soybean oil, and say, well, that can't happen to my market. You're kidding yourselves. The Goldman commodity commodity index, Goldman Sachs commodity index, is a basket of all commodities. Trust me. If these guys sniff that there's an issue in food supply, then they decide that they're going to buy everything. You saw them just get short 350,000 contracts of corn. What is corn going to do if they buy 500,000 bushels on top of the 350,000 they're short? What are a million contracts of corn? What is the price of corn going to do?
Yeah.
Who's going to stand and sell it to them?
Well, and the other thing too, Brian, you got to look at history here. Corn is historically pretty low right here. So absolutely. Being short is not the place to be.
It is absolutely
even if it goes nowhere. This is not a market you want to be short because it has the potential to go higher. I don't think it has a huge potential to go a whole lot lower.
And that's why I say,
and we're not giving advice here, folks. We're just giving our opinions.
Right. And that's why I say, if you're going to pick puts to hedge right now, and you hit the nail on the head there again, Rick, you want to be very, very careful when you buy puts, because that perception of a floor, whether it's $4 or 360 or whatever that percent, I think you see a lot of people talk about that 360 floor. Buying puts in that area, they're not going to be very, very responsive when we break. They're not going to carry the punch that you think they're going to carry. I mean, it's going to be a struggle to get down there. And I'll pull up this chart again. And if we look at this chart and we change the prices, okay, this move, if this is, let's call this 425 and call this 380, this kind of move like this all the way down, or just kind of goes sideways, is absolutely death to puts. You can't have a move like that. You need a move like this for puts to respond.
Yeah, your puts are losing value on that first scenario.
Yeah. So the reason I pulled this up is, why are the puts good on situations like this? Is because they blast through the 200-day moving average. They blast through the 100-day moving average. What can happen to your comment, Rick? What can happen to this market to cause an explosion? Well, we get through the 100 and 200-day moving averages again, the market is going to move. This time it moved lower because we went through those averages. This time we're coming from lower, going higher. If this market gets above the 100-day moving average, and then by some chance gets above the 200-day moving average, there is absolutely no way that I see that this market is going to be anything other than extremely, extremely volatile.
Yeah.
And you can see how it started. This little bar, people, I talk about this, and you've got to take notice of this bar. You had a low yesterday of 438 and three quarters. You have a low yesterday of 438 and a half. That little quarter of a cent is a big deal, because what that has created is it's created a key reversal to the upside. Okay. And this is a pattern that's very, very bullish. It's a key reversal to the upside that has gotten right up to our first level of resistance and stopped there. If we have follow through on Monday, you got to believe that the 100-day moving average is going to pull this market higher before the stuff is even in the ground. You know, now I agree with a lot of Twitter. You're probably going to have a lot of farmers selling between here and 475 and here and $5. But what happens? Well, and I've said it all along, above 512, what happens after the farmer is sold out, and then now the funds want to buy another 500,000 bushels?
Yeah. I mean,
now no one to sell it to. Now things has a mind of its own.
Yeah. You always look, whose hands are stronger in that cash market? Is it the farmer's hands or is it the commercial's hands? It's always the commercial hand.
Yes, it is.
Always. So again, there's just so many. And I think, Brian, aren't you either? I don't know if you're writing a book, but aren't you putting together your what do you call it?
Manifesto.
Your manifesto. And see, that's what we're talking about right now.
Right.
There's certain things that you look for, or there's certain trades you put on seasonally that work every time. I mean, my dad always used to buy diesel and sell gas, and then flip and buy gas and sell diesel, depending on what time of year it was. I mean, just trades like that always work.
I encourage any farmer that's looking to get into the option market, the first question they ask their broker is, what is the implied volatility of the at the money? And I'll give you a baseline from here on out. If any broker gives you an option volatility in corn under 20%, it is very, very inexpensive. Now, a very, very quick overview of that is the market has to move 1% a day to support 16%. So right now, the market has to move 4.5 cents. 4.5 cents, you see corn move 4.5 cents every hour. So 4.5, it's not likely that corn volatility is going to go to 16%. So when you want to buy option volatility, you want to pay attention. If it's anywhere near that 20% or under, it is generally a very, very inexpensive proposition to be long options. And you can, it's more volatile if you can buy them in that area, this area right here that I'm talking about, where the market is going to respond. This 475 and 550 area, this area is, if you can get optionality, if you can own options in this area, I mean, if it were me, and again, I don't know basis that well, and I don't know the cash market that well, but if the market got up into this $5 area and volatility hadn't responded, I would be doing the same thing the farmer would be doing. I'd be unloading the bins and giving them all the cash corn that I had, and I'd be replacing it with calls like you would not believe. I would re-own everything I had. If I had 100,000 bushels, I'd own 20 deltas worth. That might be 100 options. It might be 120 delta options, but I would own optionality in that area and stay in that market and get rid of the cash corn. But
Yeah,
you know it,
that's hard to do, but yes, that's the thing to do.
right. And again, you asked me in the very beginning, it's opportunity. I see so
Yeah.
much opportunity. And
Yeah.
I think it's great. I haven't talked to a lot of people yet since the number hit, but I would think there's a lot more optimism out there after today than yesterday. I mean, just with the way the numbers came out, the way the numbers laid out. I mean, you got the naysayers, but what I do notice is the people that are always complaining about the USDA, they're not complaining about them this morning, today. Today.
Because corn closed 15 cents higher.
Yeah, I know. Today the U.S. Today is the USDA is our friend. They gave us the right number.
Yeah.
You know.
Are there any questions out there, Rachel? If we haven't, Brian and I haven't stopped talking long enough to ask, but is there any questions?
Someone just asked if you could repeat the name of the book. They asked if it
Oh,
was 6 Degrees of Separation.
yeah, 6 degrees of separation. I don't know the author, but it talks about the parallels of how closely we all are related through what we do in our life. It's just amazing book. Amazing.
It's not 6 degrees of ke separation of Kevin Bacon, is
No, 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 no.
it? Somehow we're all related to Kevin Bacon. There's a there's a
Yeah,
there's there's
yeah.
there's a game about that. Like if you there's he's by some association, he's been with every single actor in Hollywood.
I don't know. It's yeah. No, it's not that though. So what else you want to hit here, bro? I mean, let's talk a little bit about you and what you've got the option army going. You're doing these classes on Saturdays now. What are you up to?
The one thing I want to mention is we talked about Rick, you and I talked about when that information came out about the dairy farms, and we had our view. I tend to think that we're pretty well attuned to the markets and what the markets bring us, and we kind of had the view that this was going to be very, very bullish for cattle. Because there's going to be a high slaughter rate in cattle. I have this Discord channel that I have that gave a different perspective to it, and it ended up playing out really well. And it's through the Option Army. If you go to my website, the Option Army, you can get on this Discord channel. If you go to my Twitter page, I think the Discord channel, the link is there. But the and it, we're getting a really, really, really nice following on and banter back and forth, and it's very, very respectful. There's nobody, no, there's
Yeah, there's nobody, folks, on this Discord he's talking about. There's, you throw an idea out, there's not somebody there back. Why in the world would you ever do? None of that's going on. This is all back and forth, helping each other out. Oh, you know what? I never thought about it like that.
right.
Tell me more.
Right. And that's what happened with that information that came out about the dairy farming. Because I did believe that the cattle, and I was short, I did believe that the cattle was going to explode that day. And what they would basically, I was short because of exactly what I told you before, where they go on
Yeah.
sideways and it looked like the puts were very inexpensive. And I think I told you the position I had on, Rick. But the banter back and forth was that people are going to be afraid to eat meat. and that is gonna drive people away from meat, and it's gonna drive people to other sources, whether it's pork or whether it's lamb or something else, but they're gonna be afraid to eat beef. And I never thought about it in those terms. But when that dialogue went back and forth, it opened my eyes to a different way of looking at that information. And that was really, really powerful. It helped me quite a bit. I was ready to pull the trigger and get out and get long and put on a bullish position in the cattle. But when I read that before the cattle market opened and I saw how the cattle market responded to it, it was something that was very, very powerful. So that's one of the things that we're doing that's expanding very well, is we have this Discord channel where there's a lot of really respectful dialogue. Now, the other thing that I've been really working hard on is I'm trying to populate it with South American influence. So I do have some people on there that boots on the ground that we're getting actual, instead of very spotty information from, you know, South America, we're getting boots on the ground from people that, you know, they want to know what's going on in North America during the North American growing season. And in return, they're sharing with us what's going on in South America. So it's very, very good. The other thing that I'm doing is I do this morning bunker, and what I do with the morning bunkers, a lot of what we did on here tonight is just show you chart formations and show you you know, things that support and show that options are too expensive or inexpensive. We relate the options to the charts. Now the thing about our morning bunker is that I like to. You have to be able to understand, you know, what we're talking about to apply to the bunker. So it's one big package. You know, if you understand, if anybody wants to know anything about it, take the free trial, you know, and get on Discord, ask me whatever you want. I'm completely 100% transparent, you know, and I don't talk about things on Discord or the bunker that I'm not willing to put my own money behind and not willing to put positions on. So when I'm talking about these things, I'm putting these things on myself, and I'll tell you how I'm hedging them. I'll tell you what I'm doing and where I pick spots. And you know, it's all about, you know, learning the product and then applying the product to the chart formations that are out there.
Right. Well, somebody's got to have a question about a market or something before we let Brian go. I mean, folks, this guy, he's the man. You just don't get to see or understand the years of experience this guy's got. This guy started in the trenches down in those octagon pits. And I don't remember how many steps there were, 4, 5, or 6. I don't remember. And it's all based on seniority, and you can only imagine the beginners are down at the bottom trying to just breathe. Oh, and the guys up on top smoking the cigars, they've got all the power. So anybody who's listening, I hope you were able to experience that. I was able to experience it. This guy lived it every single day.
They'd do anything to run you out of there. I mean, they did not want competition. So they would pick on you for anything. If they didn't like the way your shoes looked, or they didn't like the way your pants were, if your pants were wrinkled, your shirt was wrinkled, they would pick on you. They would belittle you. Anything they could do to, it was a war in there every single day.
Yeah. And you know, the markets have changed. You know, the markets, they're very fluid right now. And I understand why the exchanges have to change rules. But you talk, it's a real bummer, man. You've got a leveraged position on, you're margined up, you've got enough money in your account, and all of a sudden cocoa goes bonkers and they raise the margin limits. And guess what? You're on margin call now. Yeah, and the market, and you're right. You are correct with the market, and you still got margin calls.
It's crazy. It really is.
But they have to do that to create the liquidity, because this is getting dangerous now. I mean, this will put people out of business.
I've always said that. I think there's going to be a day, one day when, you know, they're going to wish they had human bodies back in there making markets. I mean, I've traded some of the most volatile markets you've ever traded in 2012, 2008, 2000 flash crashes. I've traded all of them. There is never once that a broker walked into the pit during the most chaotic of times and came up to me and said, I need a market in this, and I didn't give it to him. I didn't want the trade. Yeah. I didn't know what he wanted, but I gave him a two-sided market. I didn't know what he want to do. He might not have liked the market. It might have been 12 bid at 20, but I gave him a market. There is no liquidity whatsoever in these cocoa markets. Not until we started talking about it on Twitter. We started talking about how, the market would open and there was no markets in any of these
Yep.
options. One of the IBs caught wind of what we were talking about on Twitter, and about 3 days later, they started making some markets on cocoa options. But there were to my brethren that were down there, God bless them. I mean, they made markets in the most chaotic of times. I was in markets where we were limit up. Guys asked me for a market before I can get the market out of my mouth. We're 20 lower, and he wants to hold me to the market that we were at limit up. And by the time I've got it hedged, we're limit down. It moved 60 cents in like 15 minutes, very, 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 very quickly. I've traded avian flu. I've traded, mad cow disease. I've traded, grain embargoes from for root seed down in South America. Some of the craziest markets you can possibly imagine. We always continue to make markets. Now, to that though, Rick, I mean, we can use these algorithms and the liquidity of these algorithms to our advantage. We're not the days of scalping are done. There's no future scalpers that are down there trying to make quarter cents, 30,000 times a day. There's no quarter bit at half, quarter bit at half, quarter bit at half. We can use the liquidity that is being provided by these algorithms to set up, not even long-term positions, but to trade like the hedge funds do, and to mimic the hedge funds at a much smaller degree and take advantage of them. Because when they, and you saw this with meal, they don't care. When they want out, they hit a button and they get out. Price is irrelevant. Price is not irrelevant to me. And so we could take advantage of that. When they start blasting stuff is when we should be standing in there.
Well, yeah, and you got to remember now, the exit door is only so wide, and you all can't fit through at the same time, and that's what's going to happen in this cocoa market.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you, do you think the cocoa market exit door is bigger or smaller than the soybean meal small meal door? I think so too. And I hear let's just pull up a meal chart, because I talk about this chart all the time because it bothers me so much. Because I'm going to show you this right here, right here is when the ADM CEO, right here, 10/20/2023, he told us that Argentina is going to run out of meal by the end of November. It's nothing more than a pump and dump. Here we go, boom. And now the funds are long. They think they were long like 170,000 contracts of meal. Look at that. Look at how long it took them to get out the exit door. Boom. This thing has just been a bloodbath, all the way down. The same thing. If you look at this market and you look at these last bars as what's going on in cocoa, how is it going to be any different? Maybe go sideways. Maybe go sideways for another week or, 10
Well,
days.
show, hey Brian, show your 5-bar pattern right there, would you?
Let me see if I can move this.
I mean, that's a wick. I mean, that's cocoa all over right there.
Yep, one, two, three, four, five, and then boom, it's all the way down. You had the one head fake, you had this one day head fake, and then boom, it just was straight down. This is cocoa all over again. And you want to be able to reference this topping action when it happens in cocoa. That's why I keep pulling cocoa up, because you want to reference things that have happened in the past, so that when they repeat themselves in the present, you're able to take advantage of it. Because this cocoa market is not going to just drift lower. It's not, you start hearing stories about
Going to be
the people in,
violent.
the, yeah, it's going to be very violent. So you start hearing stories about these people in Ghana that are hoarding cocoa beans because they're hoarding them as if they were US dollars. That does not end well. It does not end well. I mean, poor people in Ghana, picking up sacks of cocoa beans and hoarding them and protecting them. It doesn't end like they think that it's going to end. These aren't bitcoins.
No, and you've often said this many times. Why isn't coffee reacting? Coffee's grown, and not it's not all grown where the cocoa is, but a lot of coffee's grown in the same region, and coffee hasn't moved.
Yeah,
So
that Robusta coffee, is grown in the Ivory Coast. It's a tree crop. What has that done? Let's take a look at coffee. Coffee has been, one of those markets that has gone absolutely nowhere. This is the whole cocoa rally right here. This is where it exploded. And what did
yeah.
coffee do? It went absolutely sideways, nowhere. No interest whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I do believe that some of this cocoa market rally is associated with, all the devastation that happened with the weather I think it was, what did they have, Rick? Was it like after they had the hot weather, then they had like really high winds?
Yeah, they had a drought, and then which hurt the blooming of the tree. And then when the trees had blooms on, they got 3 days of like 70-mile-an-hour winds and knocked some of the blooms off the trees. I mean, it's just been one thing after another.
Right. And I've heard numbers as high as 25 to 30% loss of a loss of a crop.
Yeah.
I respect that. I mean, there has been some devastation in that crop, but
But you know what? This high price is going to kill the demand.
absolutely.
And so then all of a sudden, what you think today, in today's environment, you think we don't have enough supply. Well, guess what? In 6 months, when candy bar sales go down 50%, all of a sudden you do have enough supply.
Yeah, and I think I saw it last night on Entertainment Tonight. They were talking about Easter and why chocolate was so expensive at Easter. When everybody starts talking about it, when the Uber driver, the dry cleaner, the golf,
Bye
and
bye.
they start posting it in Barron's and every and Entertainment Tonight, it's one of those where everybody's involved in it, and
Yeah.
it doesn't end the way everybody wants it to.
Well, Brian, I can't thank you enough for being my first guest here for about a 2.5, 3 month hiatus. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. You're not, it's not just in tune with the market, you're in tune with the reality of what's going on in the world, and it's just a pleasure to sit and visit with you.
Well, I appreciate it, Rick. I really do enjoy when you ask me to be on there, and anytime you want me to be here, I will. I really do enjoy it thoroughly.
Well, I appreciate that. And if there's no question, Rachel, is there anything in the chat that we've missed?
Nope, nothing left unanswered.
Okay. Well, Brian, we must have done a really good job because we don't have any questions. So,
That's right.
Brian, thank you. Everyone, this is an extremely holy week, so let's keep that in mind. It's a very strong week this week. Tomorrow's Good Friday. Everyone, please have a safe and joyful Easter, and let's, have a nice weekend, and we'll get back on Monday and get back at it. So, Brian, thank you.
Thank
It's been a
you.
pleasure, and everyone, we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Thanks
Bye
very much.
bye.
Bye.